Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich, and today I am joined by a returning guest. He is a contributor at Voices of Wrestling. It's Suit Williams. Hello again, Suit.
Hello, hello. Glad to be back on Music of the Mat. Glad that Music of the Mat is back. Happy that you're back up. Back in the saddle, doing it again, Andrew. Big fan of the podcast.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back myself. Been having a lot of fun so far with this remixed show. And I'm glad you're here, man. You're a busy man these days. You've got so much going on. You got your articles. You got your show previews and reviews. You got your collision reviews at F4W. You got your own blog. Your plate is pretty full, my friend.
Absolutely. I gotta stay busy. I've been lazy, so now I gotta stay busy. I got, just next week, I've got that collision on Saturday, then I got a Bad Blood preview I'm hoping to get out on Tuesday, and then I have the Dynamite Dozen, which is the 12 best matches of the fiscal year for Dynamite that drops on the day of the anniversary show. That's gonna be October 2nd, so I got a lot going on, and hopefully it stays that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. You're like the only guy on the website nowadays who is, you know, willing to stomach writing about WWE shows. and I do laugh every single time in the Slack when you're like, oh, I'll have a preview of NXT, you know, Bing Bong Des Moines or whatever. And Rich will go, no, Suit, please don't do this. Stop it. You don't have to do this, man. It makes me laugh every single time, Suit. I can't help it.
I am the canary in the coal mine for fans like us, and well, I've made it out every time, but I can't say I've made it out the same.
Yeah, somebody has to be the voice of reason, I guess. You know, somebody has to write the sacred Jedi texts, as Luke Skywalker would call them. You know, but anyway, let's get to today's topic here, and today's topic is called New Japan Epics. And when I say that, you know, we may think of the many classic New Japan main events of the past 10, 15 years with Tanahashi Okada, Okada Omega, Okada Naito, Osprey Shingo, Ibushi Jay White, and so on and so forth. Matches that are not only great, but they are also long, very long, 30, 40, 50, 60, sometimes over 60 minutes. And the songs we're playing today aren't quite that long, but we are playing songs that are at least 7 minutes long. I figure the average pop song is 3 or 4 minutes, give or take, so these are the quote-unquote epics of their field. And I went with New Japan Epics in particular because, you know, New Japan has become synonymous in recent history with having these epic long main events. Not that they're the only ones that do them, of course. There are, you know, so many other promotions that have had super long main events. But, you know, New Japan is the poster child, I guess, for it, Suit.
Absolutely. When you gave me the list of topic choices and I saw New Japan Epics 7 minutes or longer, that one popped me. So I had to pick that one. And then we had to... Then you told me I had to pick, like, songs that were 7 minutes long, and then I didn't, like, it didn't cross my mind that I had to like pick the songs, and it was just like, oh wait, I have to pick really long songs. And so I started thinking about songs like, okay, that one's probably, nope, that's 5 minutes, nope, that is 6:15, and it's like, oh boy, this is harder. But I've found a few that I think that fit the criteria, that fit my my musical taste pretty well, and I've seen your list, and a few on your list fit my musical taste as well.
And some do not, as I'm sure we'll get to here. But yeah, you know, I was thinking about you know, this topic here, and there's always these conversations about, you know, match times and what's the ideal length for a match. I don't think there is one really. I think it all depends on the quality of the match and how you fill the time, and you know, what's the story being told. You know, I think of like Okada Omega 1 from Wrestle Kingdom, which is 45 minutes long, and it's one of the greatest matches of all time. Meanwhile, you have Rock and Roman versus Cody and Seth from Mania this year, which is also 45 minutes long, and one of the most boring matches of all time. You know, it's the same amount of time, but two very different matches. Again, it all comes down to quality. It's not so much the time as to what is filling the time suit, you know?
Yeah, it's the context. It's how you fill the time. You can't, like, for me in wrestling, long matches don't mean that they're automatically good, and short matches don't automatically mean they're throwaway. One of my favorite matches of the last decade is Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar at the Survivor Series. I think it was 2017, the one where Goldberg beat him in like 2 minutes and everybody was shocked. Like, that one is where you got in, you got out, you told the most effective story you could, and you did it as efficiently as possible, and it filled me with the joy that I would get out of a 30-minute main event. And then, you know, you talked about me reviewing WWE. There were a lot of Seth Rollins matches during his really long title reign where it felt like, you know, hey, this is the main event. We go 30. We've got like 15 minutes of ideas, but hey, we'll work it out there, brother. So it's like, you just gotta work to what you have, and then the time won't matter as much. And I think a lot of the songs we've got, they got the content to fill the time.
Yeah, yeah. There's the classic Roger Ebert quote, no good movie is too long, no bad movie is short enough. You know, and that applies with wrestling, that applies with TV shows and music. And, you know, the songs we picked today are longer than the average song, no doubt, but they're still great songs. And oftentimes they can be great because they're long. You know, a long song, like a match maybe, can really take the time to build and build and build for several minutes into this climactic emotional ending that can just have more of an impact than, say, a 3-minute song might. But again, it's how you use the time, really, there, Suit.
It's interesting that you brought up Roger Ebert. I've been watching a lot of Ebert and Roper, a lot of their, like, best ofs and worst ofs on YouTube. Those were really good. Like, those were really good, like, movie reviews.
Was it Ebert and Roper or Ebert and Siskel? Because those are two different eras.
Both of them.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Because Roper replaced Siskel once he passed away. Yeah. But yeah, it was both of them. And yeah, they were both, that was a really good movie review show, that was, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm, for sure, yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's get to our songs then. You have 7, Suit. I have 8. So I'll just double up at the end, and there's a playout song as well at the very end. And since you are the guest, Suit, you have the floor. What is your first pick?
All right, so I figured for my first pick, we should do something a little topical, because going through the songs, there are a lot of older songs on the list. So I decided to start with something a little topical, a little, you know, on the pulse for right now. I decided to start with a song that is the genesis of what may be the biggest feud in the history of hip-hop. So, my song, It was supposed to be on the album Hall of Fame, but due to sample clearance issues, it was not able to. It is from the year 2013. It is by Big Sean, featuring Jay Electronica and Kendrick Lamar. This is Control. Just relaxing, popping my disc. Don't you pop me the fucking pill. I'm a poppy, then give me this. Tell Flex to drop a bomb on this shit. So many bombs ring the alarm like Vietnam on this shit. So many bombs make Farrakhan think that's a dime in this bitch. One at a time, I line them up and bomb on their mom when she watching the kids. I'm in a destruction mode if the gold exists. I'm important like the Pope. I'm a Muslim on poke. I'm Machiavelli's offspring. I'm the king of New York, king of the coast. One hand, I juggle them both. The juggernauts all in your juggler. You take me for jokes. Live in the basement, church pews and funeral faces. Cartier bracelets for my women friends. I'm in Vegas. Who the fuck y'all thought it's supposed to be? If Phil Jackson came back, still no coaching me. I'm uncoachable, I'm unsociable. Fuck y'all clubs, fuck y'all bitches. Show Instagram, get gobble these nuts. Gobble a dick up to your hiccup. My big homie corrupt. This the same flow that put the rap game on the crutch. West. I see niggas transform like villain Decepticons. Molly's probably turn these niggas to fucking Lindsay Lohan. A bunch of rich ass white girls looking for parties, playing with Barbies. Wreck the Porsche before you give them the car key. Judgment to the monarchy. It is crazy how one verse can screw up the whole game. And yeah, so the story here is that Kendrick Lamar, in 2013, rising star in the world of hip-hop, Section 80 had dropped, Good Kid, Mad City had dropped, he was on the way up, and he was asked by Big Sean, who, this is actually his song, many people won't remember that, but Big Sean asked him to feature on this track, Control, and Kendrick decided to take this verse and use it as basically a hip-hop open challenge. He decided to use his verse and, you know, tell the whole world of hip-hop, I am here, I am on a certain level. I am on the level of Jay-Z, Eminem, Andre 3000. The rest of you are not on that level. And he decides to name them all. He decides to name people like J. Cole, Big Sean, who he's on the song with, Jay Electronica, who he's also on the song with, Mac Miller, Pusha T, and Drake. He names them all, and he says, I got love for y'all, but I'm trying to murder y'all. I'm trying to take the top spot. And I'm trying to make sure none of you get it. And so everybody who he called out understood what this was. This was a call out. This was someone throwing down the gauntlet and seeing who'd pick it up. And, you know, a lot of people, they would throw verses on. They would kind of do their own thing and kind of clap back at Kendrick. And it was this fun little hip-hop kind of battle deal, all except for one. And that one was Drake, who was not a big fan of getting called out like this. He kind of sniped at Kendrick whenever people asked him about the song and asked him about his response to it. He was he took it personally, whereas others took it as a challenge to like up their game and see if they could, you know, match bars with Kendrick. So this was the genesis point to what eventually exploded earlier this year between Kendrick and Drake, where you had a whole lot of barbs thrown, a whole lot of songs dropped, and now you have Kendrick Lamar performing at the Super Bowl, where he will presumably call Drake a pedophile multiple times in front of the biggest audience on the planet. So, and this is what started it. This Big Sean song that they couldn't get cleared for his album. And now everybody thinks it's a Kendrick song. And why wouldn't they? Kendrick's verse is incredible here.
Yeah, it's like the meme of the guy holding the domino, which is this song, and then there's the giant domino at the end of the line, which is, you know, Kendrick calling Drake a pedophile at the Super Bowl. Like, that's what it is, really. Yeah, but yeah, this interests me. Like, the long rap song is interesting because, you know, you have to mostly rely on the rapping to fill the time. There's not much room for a four-minute guitar solo in here, you know? You have to keep on rapping. And in this case, you've got Big Sean rapping for 2 minutes straight. Then Kendrick raps for 2.5 minutes straight. Like, at this point, I'd be out of saliva. You know, I'd be tapping out for sure. But they just keep going. And so, yeah, I'm not a rap aficionado, as we all know. But,
really?
You know,
You're not bumping Section 80 up in Beantown, Andrew?
Surprisingly, no, Suit. I'm not. But yeah, I still understand the significance of a song like this, Suit, for sure.
Yeah, it's Kent, like, and look, the other two verses are good. Like, Big Sean's verse is a Big Sean verse. It's fine. You know, and then Jay Electronica comes on after Kendrick. It's like someone coming up to bat after a go-ahead grand slam in Game 7 of the World Series. It's like, no one's going to remember what happens here. Like, the game could have ended here. But yeah, Kendrick's verse was super significant. It was super bold. You know, it's this West Coast dude, you know, calling himself Machiavelli's son, calling himself the King of New York, which is, like, you know, you don't have to be deep in hip-hop to realize, oh, guy from California calling himself the King of New York, that could cause some problems. But, yeah, it was Kendrick stepping up to the plate and being like, I am here, I am the top of the food chain, and there are very few people on my level. Like, it's me and all-time legends. And that, it's the same kind of kernel of an idea that, like, kicked off the current feud, because there's this Drake song called First Person Shooter, him and J. Cole. And on that track, J. Cole asks, you know, who's the best of the big three? Is it K-Dot? Is it Aubrey? Or is it me? So he's basically asking, well, he's basically saying, look, we're the big three. So, you know, which one of us is better? And Kendrick responded to that in a different song. It was Future's Like That. And his response was, quote, motherfuck the big three, it's just big me. He is still of the belief that I am number one, and the gap is still big. And, you know, you gotta appreciate the boldness, especially from someone who has proven time and again that, yeah, he's very good at this rapping game.
I mean, he's playing the Super Bowl, so I think he won. You know, I think he handily won this one here. So yeah, okay. So my first pick, I'm actually going in the order of shortest to longest song here. And I also tried to not go 100% prog rock. I could have done that, but I didn't. I held off. I tried to get a little bit more variety of genres here. And my first pick, this came out in 1984. And people, grab a Slurpee, grab a Big Gulp, maybe a Slim Jim or two, because this is a 7-11 song. 7 minutes, 11 seconds. Thank you. This is by David Bowie off his album Tonight. This song is called Loving the Alien.
Yeah.
So that's a song about people fighting over religion and belief and blind devotion. What else is new? You know, very timeless topics there. And yeah, it's done in that 80s Bowie sound. This album came out right after Let's Dance, which was his biggest album ever. And it sounds like it's trying to, you know, be in that same kind of vein. And this album was, you know, it was seen as a letdown, actually, in comparison to Let's Dance. But it's got this song, which is great. It's got Blue Jean, another great song there. And yeah, it's hard to go wrong with Bowie, man. Quite the body of work. And I wish he was still here, because he is sorely missed for sure, Suit.
Absolutely, I agree with that. This song, like the second I hit play, my first note was, oh yeah, this is from the 80s. Something about the xylophone screams 1985 to me. I don't know why. But yeah, it's a very futuristic feel to it. There's a synthy outro that's on top of like the xylophone, like chorus or refrain that I really enjoy. I picked up on the religious commentary, you know, believe in the strangest things, loving the alien, kind of just, you know, believing in things that seem a little odd, you know, so I picked up on that. And then I watched the video. And yeah, that it makes it a little clearer that it's a religious commentary. It is trippy as hell, very abstract, very MTV, and very Bowie, 100%.
Yeah, and I looked this up about the song. Apparently, Bowie did not like this final 80s-ified version of the song as much as he did the demo. The demo was supposed to be a lot starker and simpler, and Bowie preferred that one instead of this, you know, version of the album. But yeah, Bowie died in 2016, same year as Prince, who, spoiler alert, will also be in the show today. And Ali died that year, Gene Wilder died that year. That was a bad year. I mean, they're all bad years, but that year in particular was just a real gut punch, especially to lose Bowie and Prince in the span of a few months. That was just awful.
Yeah, that was a tough one for the celebrities. Tough one for the death pools. It's like you're winning them, but it's like, oh man, at what cost?
Yeah. All right, what do you got next for us, Suit?
Well, next up, you brought him up, so I might as well go with him next. It is the titular song off of his 1984 album. It is also the title of his movie. It is Prince with Purple Rain. You say you want a leader, but you can't seem to make up your mind. I think you better close it. Let me guide you to the purple rain. Obviously, just an iconic song. It is the emotion that Prince is able to give off in this song is incredible. It's my second favorite track on the album. Mine is The Beautiful Ones. My number one would be The Beautiful Ones, but there's a reason this is the iconic song. It's the climax of the movie. It's the climax of the album. Prince singing that outro, just, it gives me goosebumps every time. It really does.
It's a classic song, no doubt, and I don't mean to offend His Majesty the Purple One here, but I'm a bit sick of hearing it. I can't lie, you know, because yeah. they've played it a million times on the radio over the years. And, you know, when he died, all of these musicians paid tribute to Prince, you know, at their concerts, which is fair enough, a great thing to do. But I swear to God, they all did Purple Rain. It's like, can you play You Got the Look, you know? Can you play Darling Nikki? Can you play Sexy MF? Just one of those other songs besides Purple Rain. But beyond all that, you know, if you're coming up with songs for a show like this, I think this is one of the first ones you think of. I think everyone thinks of Purple Rain pretty much when they think of just iconic long songs suit, you know?
Absolutely. You know, Party Man's right there. That's a good one to play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You know, I just said, you know, The Beautiful Ones. I love that track.
Yeah, I Would Die for You, another great one off this off this album. Yeah,
there's a lot of good Prince songs, as it turns out.
He was pretty good. He was pretty good. Yeah. We brought up the Super Bowl a little bit earlier. I should say people should check out Prince's halftime show from a few years ago at this point because he plays Purple Rain in the rain. Like, the timing was just incredible.
A few years ago. So, it was like 2006.
Look.
Peyton Manning won that Super Bowl.
Look, I'll be honest. I couldn't remember the year, and I panicked. So I just said a few years. Okay, you got me. You got me, Suit. You got me.
I just remember that because that was the year the Saints got to the NFC title game and lost to the Bears. So that was the next game I watched. So that's the only reason I remember that, like, off the top of my head. But yeah, it just caught me off guard. Oh, 2006 is, it's a while ago, man.
Well, let me take your mind off of that Saints loss with my next pick here. let's put some metal into this bad boy, shall we? I'm going with Iron Maiden for my next pick. And they have plenty of long songs to choose from. This one, 8 minutes, 37 seconds. It's off of their 1986 album, Somewhere in Time. And this song is called Alexander the Great. That is the most badass history lesson you're ever going to get on Alexander the Great. But that's Iron Maiden. That's what they do. They write badass songs, often about history, and especially war. They have a lot of war songs, and a lot of them are pretty long, too. But yeah, Maiden, I love them so much. I saw them back in 2017, I believe, and there's all this, you know, pyro going off, and the set was Mayan architecture, and there was like a walking Eddie, you know, on stage. So, you know, if you like Iron Maiden and you haven't seen them, you know, live, do it before it's too late, because they are straight up awesome.
This song was so awesome. It feels like one of their kids had like a world history project, and so they made this badass rock song to help them study it. Like, there's three different, like, beats to the song, and they all rule. Like, it really felt like they wanted to sonically track the rise and the rule of, like, a king through the song. And they're telling the story of Alexander the Great, so it tracks with that. And then I just got a kick out of the closing line being, he died of fever in Babylon. Like, that, like, that just felt abrupt, but it was very funny, and It was true. He died of fever in Babylon. So, yeah, this song, right up my alley. I loved it. Great stuff from Iron Maiden there.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of songs that reference the Gordian Knot or the Tigris River, you know? It's pretty unique in that sense. But, yeah, Iron Maiden, long songs, long albums, too. They have a lot of albums that are around 60 minutes. One of them is 90 minutes, even. So they can be a real endurance test at times with how much metal they bring to the table, for sure. But Suit, what do you got next for us?
All right, now for something completely different. We're going to hop over to 2006. We're going to hop over to a gentleman who's hoping this won't ruin the world tour. From the album Future Sex Love Sounds, this is Justin Timberlake with What Goes Around Comes Around.
Thought it was me and you, baby. And now it's all just a shame, and I guess I was wrong.
Don't wanna think about no. It, don't wanna talk about it. I'm just so sick about it.
Can't believe it's ending this way.
Just so confused about it, feeling the blues about it. I just need to
know. Can you tell me, is this fair?
Is this the way it's really going down? Is this how we say goodbye? Should I know better when you came around?
Should I know better that you were gonna make me cry?
And now it's breaking my heart to watch you run around. Cause I know that you're living a lie. That's okay, baby, cause in time you will find me.
Yeah, so this was part of the Justin Timberlake and Timbaland collaboration that made Justin such a huge deal in the early 2000s. He came out of NSYNC, straight into Justified, straight into Cry Me a River, which just blew up. And then, you know, he had his big second album, Future Sex Love Sounds. This was the album with Sexy back. This was the album with My Love with T.I., and then you had this one, What Goes Around Comes Around. A great song. I love it. You know, Justin, obviously a big Trailer Park Boys fan. Got the quote a little messed up, but it's okay. You know? but yeah, I wrote in my notes, my mom and I used to drive around listening to this album because she had it and she'd like bring me to school and stuff. And I didn't realize how weird it sounded when to say my mom and I used to drive around listening to Future Sex Love Sounds. But, hey, you know, it was a good album. What do you want me to say?
Oedipus Williams over here. Jeez, but anyway, gang.
I killed it with my Trailer Park Boys, Joe.
Hey, listen. You're shaking hands on that one, yeah. Yeah, you know, when he's not pulling a Jimmy Uso behind the wheel, that JT can sing with the best of them, for sure. Yeah, you know, I was never really a boy band guy growing up, so I wasn't much of an NSYNC fan. My sister was, of course, but I wasn't. But look, the guy is super talented, you know, singer, dancer, actor, all that stuff. And I do like this song a lot, too. Not just with the vocals, but also with the backing music and the shuffle beat and all that. And you brought up how big of an album this was. This song was a number one hit. It was a Grammy winner as well. And a few months after this album came out, Timberlake goes on SNL and does Dick in a Box. So a pretty big year for JT all told there, Suit.
All even, all equal. Sexy back and Dick in a Box. But yeah, I wasn't a boy band guy, like, growing up. You know, One Direction was kind of, like, the big one for me when I was growing up, and I was, you know, not really on that. But during the pandemic, I really got into NSYNC. Like, I just got into, like, their choreography and stuff. I would watch YouTube videos of their, like, choreography of their like big songs. I think I could do the choreography for pop if you gave me like a couple minutes to stretch. Like I could do like most of it off the top of my head. I just, you know, I learned it because it was a pandemic. What else were we gonna do? Stuck in the house.
I think the hand motion part on bye bye bye, bye bye bye. That part's easy one.
Yeah.
That's the one we all know. It's the other parts that are a little bit more complicated, I think. Okay. My next pick here. This is a band from Philadelphia called The War on Drugs. And this is from their 2014 album, Lost in the Dream, at 8 minutes, 52 seconds. This song is called Under the Pressure. Little backstory here. Some years ago, I was watching a show called BoJack Horseman, and in the season 5 finale, I believe, spoiler alert, BoJack goes to rehab, and this is the song that plays into the credits of that episode. And I really liked it. I looked it up. Wow, that's a pretty long song there. And it's just a really nice, beautiful song. It's one of those songs where there's like a minute-long intro, and then it goes into the song, and then there's a long outro. There's like a 3-minute outro of just ambient guitar soundscape bullshittery. But again, I like it a lot. And War on Drugs, don't know much else about them, but I do enjoy this song, their suit.
Yeah, the song, it's a good song. I do have a little story to tell. So I work in retail. My shoot job's in retail. I've been working that for a while now, longer than I'd like to admit. But this song has the feel of a rock song that's light enough to kind of play on the radio in a Target to break up all the pop music. So it's like, it's a good song. I like the song. But if I was like working and I was like 4 hours into a shift, I wouldn't notice it for like 2 minutes, and then like there would be like a quiet beat, and I'd perk my ears up, and I was like, "Oh, it's the War on Drugs song."
Yeah, it's a very very lush sounding song. A lot of times, that's a good word to use, lush, especially with the outro there. Yeah, look, you know, it's not one of my favorite songs, but it's a song I heard on a TV show. I liked it. I Shazammed it. It's in my iTunes. It's in my Spotify liked songs. And every so often I listen to it. That's kind of where I'm at with this one here. And not much else to say about it, really, on my end, their suit.
Yeah, I'll say about the ending. The song ends at the 6-minute mark, and the ambient ending that they've got at the end is nice. But for this project, it feels like cheating. Like, this song is 6 minutes long with, like, and it just, like, doesn't end for 2 more minutes. So it's just, it's not cheating, but it's, like, okay. It's like vamping at the end of a paper to get to the word limit.
Look, don't hate the player, hate the game, okay? I looked at the time, it fit the criteria, I liked the song, I picked it. End of story, okay? Don't blame me here on this one, but what's next for you there, Suit?
What's next for me is another title song off of an album. This one from the year 1986. This one is by Metallica. And if you are a big Metallica fan, I said 1986, you already know this is Master of Puppets. So, true story, the only Metallica song that I had heard for a long time in my life was The Memory Remains because of the Undertaker Triple H Hell in a Cell. So, that was the only song I knew until this little podcast, you may have heard of it, called Music of the Mat, did an episode where they talked about all the Metallica songs used in wrestling. And ever since then, Metallica has become like one of my favorite bands. I love all their stuff. Well, not all of it, obviously, but I love a lot of their stuff. And yeah, this is another one of the great songs they have, Master of Puppets. The intro is incredibly memorable. Metallica's really good at having those instantly recognizable intros, you know? I say, give me fuel, give me fire. You say,
give me that which I desire.
Exactly.
Go!
You know, so, yeah, this is a great song. Love the Metallica. Master of Puppets is awesome. And then, you know, it obviously had its little, had a bit of a resurgence with its use in Stranger Things recently. Well, as recently as Stranger Things came out, but yeah, great song. Great song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is another one where I acknowledge the greatness, but I'm also a bit sick of it too, you know?
Like, yeah.
although the Master, pleasant dreams that I've been after, that part still gives me the goosebumps. I still love that part, but yeah, Metallica, you know, much like Maiden, they love their long songs. It's like, their entire ethos is 3.5 minute songs, kiss our ass. You know, even when they went, you know, mainstream on the Black Album, a lot of those songs are still like 5 or 6 minutes plus. And then when they branched out even further on Load and Reload, there are still a couple of 8 or 9 minute songs on those albums too. And then when they went back to thrash with Death Magnetic, they just doubled down on the long songs. You know, I mentioned Maiden being an endurance test. Metallica is a proper endurance test, except just a little bit louder, I think, suit.
Yeah, Metallica is like Tidal Rain Okada, where it's like his matches don't start until the first Rainmaker.
So. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, let's see what I have next here. I have a big left turn.
Absolutely.
From the last song. This one is taking us back to 1965. And this is a version of a black spiritual done by the late, great Nina Simone. And other versions of this song have been like 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes long, whatever. Her version, 10 minutes, 20 seconds. This is off of her album Pastel Blues. This is Sinner Man.
Oh, sinner man, where you gonna run to? cinnamon. Where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to the rock? Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord, all on that day. But the rock cried out, I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I ain't gonna hide you, God, all on that day. I said, rock, what's the matter with you, rock? Don't you see I need you, rock? Lord, 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 all on that day. So I ran to the river. It was bleeding around to the sea. It was bleeding around to the sea. It was bleeding.
So this song, I first heard it in a movie. It's been in a bunch of movies and TV shows over the years. Been remixed a bunch as well. But the original is just incredible. Nina Simone, an absolute tour de force singer and piano player. And this whole song is like a tornado, just the way it's constantly swirling and going around, never really slowing down either. Like there's a breakdown section in the middle, which is very hypnotic, but it's always still going. And it keeps building into this super emotional crescendo, this one final big note. You know, I've never been to a black church suit, but when I hear this song, I feel like I'm there, you know? I feel like I'm in the room. And I love this song so much. I think of all my songs today, this one is right near the top, I suppose, suit.
Yeah, my first note for this is church music. My second note is, this one's a builder. Like, it builds up and up and up. And when it gets to that breakdown, because I have been to a black church, I can just hear in my head like a pastor preaching over that breakdown, like right before the piano comes in. And then through the end of it, I can picture like my grandma in her Sunday dress dancing in the aisles with her sisters in the church. So yeah, this is a very like spiritual song in that kind of way. There is one part of it that caught me in a different way. So 8.5 minutes in, there is this kind of breakdown where Nina Simone goes, highway, highway, oh. And that part, it popped in my head like something snapped in my head where I realized, wait a minute, this is the intro to a different song. Someone sampled this for the intro of a different song, and it's Get by Talib Kweli. That was a song I was really into when I was younger, and I still like now. But as soon as I heard that part, I was just like, oh, that's a sample. And I have such a great respect for people who like sample music and make beats with it, because to get to 8.5 minutes of a Nina Simone song and use that for an intro to a different song, that's just like, it feels like a really, like, I sound like Meltzer right now. It's just a talent that I respect, having that like musician's ear to take this one part and know that it can work in a completely different genre.
You need to clear your throat more and shuffle the papers around to really be Meltzer, I think.
I'm muting the mic when the music is playing, and I am sounding like a car starting up.
Yeah. Look, Nina Simone, R.I.P. She has a lot of great songs to her name, a lot of great covers too, in her catalog. So if you haven't heard much of her stuff, I recommend checking her out. But Okay, what's your next pick there, Asut?
All right, my next pick, kind of dipping into your bucket a little bit, Andrew. Eased up on the prog rock. I picked it right up. So this song, it is from 1971. It is from the album Fragile. And it is from a band called Yes. And this song is called Roundabout. Yeah, so I know this song because of the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure memes on Vine, where it would be like, to be continued, and something like something bad was about to happen, and then the song would kick in. But yeah, one day I just decided to listen to the rest of the song because I liked the intro. And yeah, it's a very cool song. The main refrain is very funky. There's some keyboard breakdowns in there that I really like. If I had any video editing skills, I would have made one of those vines where it's like, if you don't know, the joke is the intro to the song where it's like the guitar.
And then when it gets to the bow, it freeze frames, yeah.
I would have done that with Eric Bischoff playing guitar on Impact that one time, and then the end with Jeff Jarrett hitting him with his guitar. I would have done that if I knew how to video edit, but yeah, that aside, it is a very, very funky song. I like it.
Well, not to be a hipster snob, but I was a fan of this song before it became a meme. Thank you very much. yeah, this song I've heard a lot, and I still love it. I'm a huge Yes fan. And, you know, it's no wonder why this became, like, their defining song, or one of them anyway. Just the Chris Squire bass line, the Rick Wakeman keyboards. Like, this album is the first album with the classic Yes lineup. John Anderson, Chris Squire, Steve Howe, Rick Wakeman, Bill Bruford. And everybody in this song is so on point. They're so technically excellent. And they're moving, man. They are in this thing. This is a work rate special. Meltzer would go at least 4.5 on this bad boy. And it's just an excellent song that, again, I've heard a lot. But, you know, I still enjoy it, for sure. For sure. But I actually brought my own Yes song to the proceedings, which we will get to later on because it's a bit longer than this one, suit. So just hang on to your hat, folks. We'll get to that one later for sure. But in the meantime, I have another famous prog rock band. This is Genesis. I'm a big Genesis fan as well. And obviously during the Peter Gabriel years, they were much, much more prog rock oriented. They had a bunch of long songs. One of them called Supper's Ready, 23 minutes long. I did not pick that one. Instead, I went with a song from the Phil Collins era of the band, and it's still a long song. This is from their 1986 album Invisible Touch. At 10 minutes and 45 seconds, this is Domino. So that song is in two parts. The first half is the slower, moodier part. The second half, which I played, is, of course, the faster and more upbeat part. And talk about timely, because Tony Banks, the keyboardist, he based the song on the 1982 Lebanese War between Israel and Lebanon. And lo and behold, 40 years later, we find ourselves in a very similar pickle in the Middle East. So, yeah, how about that? But yeah, you know, when people think of the Phil Collins era of Genesis, they think of the band becoming more and more pop-oriented and having pop hits like Invisible Touch, Land of Confusion, Into Deep, I Can't Dance, That's All, those kind of songs, which are all great songs, don't get me wrong, but they still managed to hold on to their prog rock roots through those Phil years, as evidenced by this song, as evidenced by songs like Tonight, 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 or Mama, or Driving the Last Spike, or Fading Lights, those kind of songs, which are much, much longer than the pop hits. So, like I said, I'm a big Genesis fan. I love both eras of the band, and I could have easily picked a Peter Gabriel song, don't get me wrong, but I wanted to pick a Phil song that I love that also fits the criteria, Suit.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, when you said Peter Gabriel, I panicked in my head because my first note here is Phil Collins is such a great singer. And in my head, I was like, wait, I did not mix them up. That sounded like Phil Collins.
No. Sorry,
but then
about
you
that.
Were like, then Phil Collins came in like, oh, okay. So Phil Collins was next. But yeah, this is a very 80s song again. I love the beat changes. The second half of the song felt very jammy, very fun, despite the content of it. But I didn't have too much to say about it, but I enjoyed listening to it. I enjoyed Domino by Genesis, as I just blanked out on the full sentence I was going to say.
I actually saw Genesis live on their last American show ever in Boston a couple years ago, and they played this song. And, Phil, he has seen better days. He's a shell of his former self physically. He walks out with a cane. He sits down the entire show. His voice is like 75, 80% of what it used to be, I think, but damn it. He still got the Phil Collins charisma, you know? He's like Tanahashi. You know, Tanahashi nowadays, it hurts to watch him. But he's still Tanahashi, you know? Go Ace, go Phil. You know, that's the similar vibe they have, I think, Suit.
You know in your head they don't have one more in them, but you know in your heart that they do.
that's a good way to put it, for sure, yeah. Yeah. What's next for us there, Suit?
Next up, we're going to hop to 1982. We are going to talk about a very foundational track in the history of hip-hop. This is the titular song off of the album from Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. This is The Message.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stairs, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breeze.
Yeah, so this is a very foundational track in like the history of hip hop. Even if you've never heard the song, you know the line, "Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge." It is permeated kind of like culture as like a beginner rap, like a beginner rap bar kind of. But yeah, it's basically, you know, these guys telling their stories of, you know, living on the wrong end of urban life, and, you know, it's kind of driving them crazy. So it's, you know, the beat is great. I love the beat, but for 82, it's a really good beat. And yeah, it's just, it's a really good song. That's what I would say about it.
Yeah, you stole my notes. I was going to say, like, you know, even as a white suburban kid who loves rock and metal, I knew this song. Like, specifically the refrain, the "Don't Push Me" line. I knew that line before I even heard the song. And then I hear it and I'm like, they're talking about pissing on stage? What is this? Like, you know, but you know, it's a social commentary, you know? It's literally called The Message. It's right there. And in high school, I took an American pop culture class. When we got to the 80s, this is one of the songs we listened to. And it's no big shocker why. It's not just an important song in rap history. It's also an important song just talking about, you know, the problems of the time period, too.
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, it was very much just these guys, you know, telling the story of being like, look, you know, we can package this in a fun little way, but it's just like, you know, it's tough out here and we're gonna like express ourselves and tell you about it. And if you like it, great. And a lot of people did. And, you know, it kind of inspired a whole lot of other people in New York to kind of tell their stories through their points of view. And yeah, from that standpoint, it's like an incredibly important hip hop song.
Mm-hmm. And the guys doing the rapping are Melly Mel and Duke Booty. Great name there, Duke Booty. And Melly Mel also does White Lines, another message song about cocaine. And I didn't know this until a few days ago, but apparently Melly Mel was involved in pro wrestling.
Really?
He tried out for wrestling school. I think it was even Deep South Wrestling in like his 40s. And then he became a manager in something called the Urban Wrestling Federation, which is like a gangsta hip-hop wrestling league.
Oh my god, I remember
this. I swear to god this is true. Like, I looked it up. I was stunned to find this out.
I can confirm this because Brian and Vinny did reviews of the Urban Wrestling Federation. And it was as funny as you would expect. Brian Alvarez talking about the Urban Wrestling Federation.
And then this bloke called Melly Mel comes out.
I did not know that. That is very funny.
Yeah, there's a couple of articles about it online. There was such a deep connection between wrestling and hip-hop. Like, Melly Mel and this thing, No Limit Soldiers, Ron Killings, MVP, like, the list just keeps going on and on and on.
Top Dollar, of course.
Top Dollar, of course. Swerve Strickland as well. Again, such a deep-rooted history between these two magnificent entities, for sure. But anyhow, let's get to my next pick here. And again, this is something that's a bit different than what we just played. This is from 2005, and it's a group of guys who like to get a bit out there, a bit experimental, a bit wild. And this is the Mars Volta, which sounds like an NXT name, Mars Volta. But this is off of their album Francis the Mute. This is Elvia Kez. Alright, so I took 12 years of Spanish in school, so I'm pretty confident I can translate these lyrics. Hello. How are you? Where is the bathroom? Where is the library? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those are the lyrics. oh, I kid. Of course, I kid. I kid. Yeah, so this album is a concept album about this guy who is an orphan, and his mom is Frances, and she gets killed, and Elvia is his aunt who sees the murder. It's a whole big thing. And that's really how I describe the Mars Volta. They are a whole big thing that just throw every sound into a blender, and that's how they make music. Rock, metal, Latin, jazz, ambient. They're a lot to take in. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of them, but, you know, when I'm in the right mood, I do like to listen to them. But again, Suit, I apologize. They're a lot to take in.
Yeah, this one snuck up on me because the intro was like kind of quiet and low key. And then they just jump right in and it's like, oh, okay, you've got my attention. I really like this song though. I love like there's some Spanish guitar licks in the second half of the song specifically that I really like. This feels like a song that Americans would find through a video game soundtrack. Like, they'd stick this on, like, a Madden soundtrack or Tony Hawk Pro Skater, and, like, a lot of people would get into the band because of it. I really enjoyed it. You know, they went back and forth between Spanish and English, you know. It was very Rey Mysterio crossing borders.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Life is hard and mi vida es dura. That's an important lesson there, Suit.
Absolutely. I think that was the only good part of that pay-per-view, No Way Out, 2005. Oh, same year.
Yeah.
How about that?
Look at that.
I do feel bad, though, because they did seem to drop their mic in either syrup or molasses in the last minute of the song.
Yeah, they get a little wonky. They get a little wonky in the songs they do, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there was this, like, weird, like, kind of bubbly, like, underwater effect they did on it that was kind of cool. But yeah, I like this song. I'm gonna check out a little bit more of this band. I do appreciate the, like, you know, heads up that they, like, jump all over the place a little bit. So they might not all be Elviasquez, but Elviaquez. I was close enough. Rich does that all the time on the flagship where he's like, you know, Hechicero, however you say it. And it's like, just pick one. Pick one and be wrong. But yeah, I'm going to check out more of the Mars Volta after this.
Okay, well, just to give you a little bit of a heads up here, if you do listen to this album, this is not the longest song on the album.
Oh, wow.
This is the third longest song on the album. The shortest song, The Widow, is about 6 minutes long. The longest, Cassandra Gemini, 32 and a half minutes long. Now, it's one of those deals where it's split up into multiple parts. It's one of those things. But, yeah, all together, it's 32 and a half minutes long. So, yeah, that's the Mars Volta. They can be very exhausting and pretentious, and I don't think they care. And that's fine. Not every band works within the three-minute pop song model, and not every band should. We need the weirdos out there to just keep going crazy and provide that variety, provide that spice into our musical palettes there. So, yeah, fair warning, if you want to listen to the Mars Volta, free your schedule.
Yeah, you shouldn't really need to, like, edit yourself down. Like, you, like, put out, like, when it comes to art, you know, put out what you want to put out, and the people who are going to enjoy it are going to flock to you, you know what I'm saying? You know, if you put out a product for the sickos will come.
Absolutely. Yeah. True words have never been said on this show before there, Suit. So, yeah. Okay, what is your last pick for us, Suit?
Last song, we're going to hop to 1972, and we are going to take you to Motown for this one. This is off of the album All Directions. This is The Temptations with Papa Was a Rolling Stone.
It was the 3rd of September, that day I'll always remember. Yes, I will, 'cause it was the day that my dad nothing but bad things about him. Mama, I'm depending on you. Tell me the truth. Mama just hung her head and said, son, Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
This song, very psychedelic. This was later in the run of the Temptations. This was after David Ruffin. This was after David Ruffin had left the band. They had replaced him. And this was kind of their new direction as they went into the 70s. And it was a good direction for them because I love this song. The single version of the song was just under 7 minutes. It was 6 minutes, 57 seconds. But the full version is about 12 minutes long, so it's still counted. So, but yeah, it is a lot of the, a lot of that length is just the beginning, the intro of the song where it's dun 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 dun. And then there's some symphony elements thrown in there as well. And then they get to the song, which is, you know, a young man asking his mother about rumors about his dad. And the mama just having to say, look, Papa was a rolling stone. Your papa got around. And all, when he died, all he left us was alone. So, you know, a very kind of a downtrodden song, but it works for kind of the psychedelic funk that they were going for there.
Yeah, I had a hard time picking between getting a clip of the singing or just getting a clip of the music, because that bass line and the waka waka guitar and the trumpet part, that's just as famous as the vocals. And that's pretty much all Norman Whitfield. Like, he's the songwriter and producer here. That's all his influence. And this was a big point of contention between him and the band. The band did not like the direction they were going in here with this song. They didn't want to do songs like this that are 10 or 11 minutes long with this, you know, intricate music that gets more emphasis than they got. They wanted to do songs like My Girl again, not this. And, you know, this ended up becoming one of their best songs and also a number one hit. So they kind of lost the battle in that sense. But, you know, you look at other R&B and soul songs of the time, this was kind of the direction it was going in. You know, this kind of cinematic soul, I think is the term for it. You have the theme from Shaft, you have Superfly, you have, you know, Love to Love You Baby. So it was kind of going in that way really overall. And yeah, great pick, man. I kind of forgot all about it until you picked it. So I'm kind of kicking myself in that sense. But yeah, real good song, real classic.
Yeah, I had a friend in middle school, Eric, who had put me onto the Temptations. I think we were watching like the Temptations TV movie that's on VH1 all the time. But yeah, he was super into the Temptations and he got me into them. And yeah, you know, I love their earlier stuff. You know, My Girl, there's what else?
Just My Imagination.
Yeah, Just My Imagination is fantastic with Eddie Kendricks taking the lead on that one. And, you know, my favorite part of that Temptations movie is obviously the part where they're arguing with Eddie Ruffin about his drug use and about him, you know, kind of trying to take control of the band. And I'm saying Eddie Ruffin, David Ruffin. I'm getting him and Eddie Kendricks mixed up. But David Ruffin turns to Otis and says, "Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis." Like, just so dismissive to the rest of the group that they had to kick him out. So, yeah. Long history with the Temptations for me, and I'm a big fan of them.
Okay, so I have two picks left. So let's get to them.
Strap
here.
In, folks.
Strap in, folks. Strap in. They're a couple of doozies for sure. My second to last pick is by a band called Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Or as they might be known in some other timeline, Frankie Kazarian Goes to Hollywood. That's stupid. I'm sorry. This song is from their 1986 debut album. It's the title track from the album. At 13 minutes and 40 seconds, this is Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
In Xanadu did Kubla Khan Pleasure Dome erect. Moving on to
This would have been a good Ooh-Ha Nation theme. Ooh-ha, ooh-ha, ooh-ha. So, for those of you out there who may not know, if you've ever seen Zoolander, the song that plays when they brainwash Ben Stiller, relax, don't do it, when you wanna go do it, that's this band. And this is one of their other hits. And we've played a lot of 80s music on the show so far. I think this is the most 80s music in just pure crystallized form, the synth excess, the bombast, the pure unfiltered joy. It's a great song, and that refrain, the Shooting Stars refrain, is pretty appropriate because this was a number one album, and then, of course, there's infighting, and the second album is a disappointment, and then the band breaks up. And that's so often the case, but I still stand by this first album and this song. It's a long one, don't get me wrong, but I am moving and grooving to every second of this song there, Suit.
I will say this. This can go for a lot of songs, but this song particularly, you can picture someone on a lot of drugs enjoying this song.
Oh, yeah.
Someone very sweaty, their shirt is off, they're kind of just waving their arms in the air. You can picture it in your head when you're listening to this. It's very hypnotic. It's very trancey. You know, it's very 80s funk. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty pleasurable. You know, a dome worth of pleasure. I'm not sure. I don't know about that. But it was pretty pleasurable, I would say.
Fair enough, fair enough. Frankie, they were a pretty controversial band in their day. I know Relax was banned by the BBC for a couple of weeks because it was deemed obscene, and two of the original members are openly gay, and they made being gay a big part of the band's music and identity in the 80s, so you can imagine the controversies there. And look, despite whatever happened, they still had a very successful album, and I do, again, recommend that album for people to check out. That's Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and now the podcast goes to my last pick. How's that for a transition there, Suit?
That's a good one. You're a pro.
I try my best. I do.
They pay you the big bucks for a reason.
I'm supposed to be getting paid big bucks for this? I wasn't aware of that. Somebody call my lawyer, quickly. my last pick here, and I've saved the yes for last. And Suit, you played Roundabout earlier, and if you think Roundabout is a long song, Phooey and Pshaw This song laughs at Roundabout because it is 18 minutes and 43 seconds. It takes up an entire side of the album. From 1972, this is the title track. This is called Close to the Edge. When Yes wants to make an epic, they don't mess around, because this song is an epic. There's four different sections. It starts and ends with nature sounds. There's an entire section devoted to a church organ in there. There's all these time changes and mystical lyrics. It is a thick cut of prog rock beef, and it takes a good while to chew it, but I love it. I think it's a great song. It's one of their best songs, really. Now, I do want to read the following Slack messages from one Suit Williams. Before the recording, I messaged Suit, "Hey Suit, I just got home. Let me know when you're ready so I can set up, and I'll drop the link for the record." Suit replies, "I'm still listening to this goddamn Yes song, but I'll be set in about 10 minutes. I reply, "Haha." Suit replies, "I know the gimmick was long songs, but," in all caps, "18 minutes." So, yeah, I take it you weren't a huge fan of this one, Suit?
The first note I took was, all caps, 18 minutes. And it's actually almost 19 minutes. I undersold it, because it's closer to 19. I didn't hate it, you know? For an 18 minute song, to say that I didn't hate it is probably a plus.
It's a win.
You know, I thought it was a bold move to kick off the song with like a hoppy guitar solo for the first part, which is called "The Solid Time of Change." There was the come down at about 8.5 minutes. I don't know which part that was. I don't know if that was Total Mass Retain or I Get Up, I Get Down.
That's probably the I Get Up, I Get Down.
Yeah,
I Get Up, I Get Down.
Yeah, there was that come down. It legitimately almost put me to sleep. Not because it was boring, because it's
very soothing.
It did sound like one of those sleep audios, you know?
Yes, John Anderson has a very lovely voice.
Yeah. But yeah, it could have been four different songs, but they decided to go for the home run. I respect the effort, you know? And again, for an 18-minute song, I didn't hate it. You know? It was fine.
Well, you fell victim to one of the classic blunders, the most famous of which is never get involved in a land war in Asia, but only slightly less well-known is this: never do a show about long songs with a Yes fan, because we will destroy your ass. And as long as this song is, they've got longer ones. There is such a thing as too much Yes, because this album is three songs. It's this, And You and I, which is 10 minutes, and Siberian Katru, which is 9 minutes. And this is considered one of their best albums, and one of the best prog rock albums ever. The next album, Tales from Topographic Oceans, is a double album. It's four songs, one per side.
Oh, Jesus.
Each song is 20 minutes long, give or take, and it's gotten mixed reviews over the years. Some people like it, some people think it just went too far. I'm of the latter, which I think really backs up what we said earlier, which is it doesn't matter how long a song is. What matters is how you fill the time, how you use the time. And with Close to the Edge, yes, it's almost 19 minutes long, but it's almost 19 minutes of prog rock goodness, in my opinion, Suit.
There you go.
All right, well, those were our picks, and that was the episode. Suit, thank you so much for being here again. As always, you're a great pal, a great podcast guest as well. I know things got a bit long there with my picks towards the end, but you hung in there, and we made it through. So thanks again, man.
Thank you. Glad to be on. You're a great podcast host, and I'm glad to have been back on the show with you, my man.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Any plugs doing a gig? Go right ahead.
Yes. Yeah, so you can follow me on social media at Suit Williams. I write for voicesofwrestling.com, previews, reviews, columns, all sorts of things. I do the AEW Collision reviews for f4wonline.com. And I also have my own blog, Williams Watches Wrestling. You can find that at suitwilliams.wordpress.com. I'm not giving them the $12 for suitwilliams.com. I just don't feel like it. But yeah, on that blog, I'm doing all sorts of like extra stuff. Right now, I am doing Williams Watches WrestleMania, where I watch all the WrestleManias in order. WrestleMania 8 just recently went up, and I plan on doing one once every Wednesday. So yeah, check that out. I'll have other projects to do as well. And there are also $5 match requests that you can request of me as well. You can find more of that, again, at suitwilliams.wordpress.com.
All right, well, let me just reiterate, voicesofwrestling.com, Twitter at Music of the Mat. If you want to leave a comment about this episode or share your picks, voicesofwrestling.com/discord. And of course, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, your player of choice, and leave a nice rating and review. Okay, the playout song for today is another song I discovered via television. It's the theme song for the HBO show Big Little Lies with Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon. And I was a bit stunned to find out that it's actually 10 minutes long in studio form. Obviously, they cut it for the show. But this is a British artist named Michael Kiwanuka. It's off of his album Love and Hate. This is Cold Little Heart. Thanks again, Suit.
Thank you.
Did you ever fight it? All of the pain, so much pride running through my veins.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.